Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Free K-12 Education Talk Radio, which is the voice of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. Everything we do is over at ACE-ed.org, ACE-ed.org, including the new issue of our wonderful magazine. It's an online journal called Equity and Access. You'll be very impressed if you go over there, and you'll love the stories that are in there for pre-K-12 educators. Again, over at ace-ed.org, that is where this podcast will be archived, and we're proud to say we have our new website, which is called SEL Today, Social Emotional Learning. The two websites are linked. You can go over to one and easily get to the other. But Social Emotional Learning, which we're just starting with, okay, it looks nice. You'll really enjoy it if you go over there. It's a big news feed on SEL, et cetera, is at seltoday.org. I got to thank my good friends at Rosen Publishing Group. Rick Hassenjager is going to be with us today. He's a returning guest. We're going to talk about school libraries in the COVID era. And I just want to say a couple of things before I bring Rick and his guest, Chris Harris, on. A, we were supposed to have Melissa Jacobs, no relation to yours truly, okay, who was the director of the New York City School Library System, which is a huge job. And I happen to know somebody who had it before her. That would be Rick Hassenjager, and he'll be on in a minute, okay? She couldn't be here today because of staffing issues, which brings to the whole point of what's going on with COVID, et cetera. I wanted to recognize Melissa. I know she does a great job, and she is always welcome here. And we've also got Dr. Christopher Harris here. Rick has brought him along. Chris is the school library system director from Western New York, the Genesee Valley BOCES. And BOCES, of course, are an educational service agency. And as you all know, we do a lot of work with educational service agencies and AESA, which is their national organization. In fact, tomorrow we've got someone coming on from the Milwaukee area, ESA, talking about special education needs. So ESA's, Rosen Publishing, a big hello to Melissa, who couldn't be here with us today. She's too busy. And first of all, I'll say hello to Rick. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
It's always a pleasure to have you here, Rick. It is indeed. And you always give your old job to people named Jacobs, from Hassenjager to Jacobs.
I have to find great people.
You know, and the trick is you put up a poster, always give the next job to a Jacobs, and you're in good shape. Okay, I'm sorry.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I'm sorry she couldn't join us today, but as I wrote you, she is welcome here anytime with you, or even, if possible, without you. Doesn't matter. Okay?
Let her know. All right. I will certainly pass that on to her.
And I can only imagine how busy she is these days. Chris Harris, welcome to the show. I'm Larry.
Thank you. Hello. Great to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Where are you? In Buffalo? Where are you these days? Where are you?
I'm in a little town called Leroy. They can't quite make their mind up. We are located about halfway between Rochester and Buffalo, the birthplace of Jell-O.
That's a shaky foundation, if I could make one lousy joke. Okay? Right? Just say that again. Jell-O.
The birthplace of Jell-O. The Jell-O Museum is here in town.
In Leroy, New York.
Yes. Yes.
Continue. What is in the Jell-O Museum? I can't even imagine. Rick, did you know this?
I had no idea.
This is why we do this show.
There's the Jell-O Walk of Fame. They have some of the spoons that were up on the Jell-O ad in Times Square.
Oh, my God.
The history of how Jell-O was created. Yeah.
This is amazing. Leroy, New York. And I wonder if they have a sculpture, because let me relink this to education. When I was a kid in elementary school, we would have peas and carrots at the school lunch on Monday. And then on Tuesday, the peas and carrots would be suspended in like lemon Jell-O. Okay? That was dessert. Okay. Do they have a sculpture showing all the various things that have been placed inside Jell-O for school kids for the next day?
They do have some examples of things that have been in Jell-O. That is a That is a classic Midwestern attribute of food.
Congratulations to living in a very cool place. Wow, that's incredible. Okay, and I got to say this also. I love the ESAs. To me, that's what BOCES are, education service agencies. And I got to tell you that to me, they are the hidden gem of education. They do so much. I love working. I don't know if you know Joan Wade, who runs your national association. I work with her a lot. Okay, and you know, you support the libraries, and everybody listen to this. This is out of the Genesee Valley BOCES. Chris supports 22 small rural districts in Western New York supporting their school libraries. I am very impressed, sir. That's wonderful.
It is a great job. I've been here about 20 years.
Wow.
And I love it because it's a chance to be entrepreneurial. So in New York State, the school library systems are a state-funded agency. And so while BOCES is normally funded through district subscriptions to our
right.
cooperative services, we have an opportunity because we are a state-funded agency housed at the BOCES, our school library systems can be incredibly entrepreneurial. We can start up new programs,
wow.
we can try new things, and really launch it. So we have here at the Genesee Valley BOCES School Library System, the largest board game library. So we've really focused on game-based learning and play-based learning, and we were able to get that going without having to really have that district buy-in from the very beginning, although now we have tons of support for it.
Well, and I'll tell you something. Since you mentioned play-based learning, I did an interview. I'm going to send it to you later with Dr. Peter Gray of Boston College last week. He's an expert on the importance of play as a part of learning. I'm going to send you that show, okay? From last week. He's also got a book out there. It's all written into the show, and I think you'll really enjoy that. This is really fascinating. Rick, how do you and Chris, you're at Rosen Publishing, okay? Rick's the VP of Curriculum Resources over there. Rick, how do you and Chris interface?
So we interface in a variety of ways. A, we're ex-colleagues, so we have the same
right.
type of role. We
right.
Our paths have crossed quite a bit, but today we still interact quite often. So whether that is through getting Chris's feedback on what the needs of school libraries are and of schools and what our students' needs are, we at Rosen really value his opinion and others like him. And
so we
have frequent conversations about what are the needs? How can we help? What are you struggling with? What are some of your greatest challenges? So we really do things in a cooperative manner in that way.
You guys are wonderful. And everybody, by the way, it's rosenpub.com. You can also Google Rosen Classroom, okay, if you want to. That's a great company. I love having Rick and the team on every so often. I'm going to say the magic word, considering all the pressure, that word is COVID. Chris, talk about COVID and school libraries.
Yeah, it's been a wild ride for sure, and it's still ongoing. We've really tried to, keep our librarians up to date. I work with another great group nationally called Every Library, and, we did some initial forecasting about COVID back in the very early days, March 2nd and 3rd of 2020, before everything blew up. We were trying to get libraries thinking about what COVID is going to do for them, what changes they'll need to make, how we're going to move services more digital, how we're going to continue to support students even if they weren't in our buildings anymore. And it's been a real challenge.
But it's been a challenge in two different places. I want to talk about this. And, Rick, you can actually tap in with your expertise on the urban side. I want to talk about the rural side. All right. And maybe there's no difference, but I have a feeling there is. I'm not sure of that, but I just have a feeling. All right. Again, Genesee Valley BOCES in Leroy, New York. Okay. Supporting the libraries of 22 small rural districts. They really need you. All right. And
absolutely.
Put COVID into rural, how it has worked with rural districts.
So I really take a lot of pride for working with the rural districts. As I said, I've been here about 20 years, and there is a lot of needs out here. You know, our districts, our average district size, 22 districts sounds like a lot, but the average size of our districts is about 1,000 students. So they don't have all of the capacity of larger districts, suburban or urban districts. And there's a lot of overlap between urban poverty and needs in districts and rural poverty needs. But we don't always have the grants and the resources, and we certainly don't have the density of population. That's both a problem and a solution in urban areas. And so for our schools, a lot of it was around just getting hotspots out to students to maintain that connection. In a lot of cases, we don't have reliable broadband access. And in fact, in a lot of our districts, we don't have cell phone access. And so even those hotspots are not a real solution. And I should say, we're rural, but we're not like Wyoming rural or Alaska rural. That's a whole different level of rural.
Agreed.
And so it really is a challenge. And so one of the things that we were trying to do was help our librarians set up still a way to do, you know, drive-up, curbside checkout of books. So students could browse the online catalog. They could say, I want this kind of a book, and really, you know, still have that level of access. Because they just don't have that online access always. And so it really becomes a huge issue where you think, oh, everything's digital. We have a lot of digital resources, but the students couldn't always get to them from home because of the lack of broadband.
And so all that said, okay, what's the big lesson, if I may, for school libraries, as they, especially rural ones? I'm going to get to Rick in a second for more urban. As we hopefully come out of COVID. And by the way, there's going to be more pandemics in the future. We have to be prepared for these. Let's learn lessons from all this. What has been learned, Chris, as you just look back on it?
So my big lesson that I try to explain to people is that when I look at a library program, a school library program, I really look at it as three aspects: the space, the resources, and the certified school librarian as a person. And even if the space had to become classrooms or was put to another purpose, and even if our resources, you know, we couldn't get to our physical resources necessarily, we had to go all digital for a period, there was still that school librarian, the person that could maintain the library program, could be a technology expert to help as students and parents struggled with getting online and learning how to learn online, could provide, you know, new types of online materials, novels, class sets of books for teachers. The resources became critical. The person that could deliver the resources, organize the resources, sift through the resources. You probably saw, you know, in schools, all of a sudden, you know, publishers came out of the woodwork with free resources. But what we had to remind the librarians is, hey, if you weren't buying these resources before the pandemic, was it a lack of money or was there another reason?
Yeah, and, good point.
You know, sometimes we get overwhelmed. And so I do a lot of talking about choice theory and choice overload, and we get overwhelmed. And so one of the roles of the library was to sift through all of the possibilities and say, these are the ones that are the best fit for our current needs and our current, you know, place in the curriculum. And that was a huge role because teachers were absolutely overwhelmed. And we needed to do a lot of the choice and selection to help them because that's our expert area.
And I hope you figured out that I'm a big fan of school libraries. Okay, I work a lot with AASL too. Okay, I just think they're so important. And on that note, another question for you, Chris. As you worked with educators, and librarians by their nature tend to be quiet. That's kind of a funny way to put it. Okay, and to me, the role of the school library is so important. It's so damn important. And librarians, and I've had this conversation with AASL, you know, really need to toot their own horn. All right. Do you see, as we come out of this pandemic, a deeper appreciation of school librarians? Chris?
I do.
I hope so.
I absolutely do. I've heard from, you know, a lot of superintendents and principals that have really seen the value that sometimes you're right, quiet, hidden value. One of the things that I'm working on is I'm very excited. We got a grant from the Institute of Museum and Library Services a national leadership grant for libraries. And in this cycle, we are the only school library program that was funded. And we're going to be convening four national forums. The first one's going to be in January to really look at post-COVID school libraries. And we're going to invite in superintendents and principals and educational leaders from across the country to really see, you know, what really worked here. What did we develop as a new type of service that we want to keep around because it was so valuable? New collaboration opportunities, new supports, huge.
It is huge. And, Chris, we run, I think you heard me say at the beginning, American Consortium for Equity in Education. We deal a lot with school libraries. And I want you to know as that comes together, please tap into us. Rick can certainly be involved in that as well with Rose and Pub. All right. And we're happy to publicize all that or whatever you need. We'd love to be involved in that. That's a wonderful
thing. Thank you.
And I mean that. That's I am sincere. I want you to know that. I am sincere when I offer these things. Okay, now you'll have my email by the end of today. Rick, you're the urban guy. You're the city guy. Okay?
Rick, are you the
city guy? Do you agree with that? I mean, I'm trying to get a – yeah, do you agree? You're the city guy?
I do. I do agree with that. And within that, I would say that urban centers have some – other challenges that maybe some of our rural areas may not. Some of them still do.
Thank you.
And I think it has to do more around the staffing. A lot of our urban school districts, and I'm talking about nationally, we have an inadequate number of school librarians that serve the schools. Oftentimes, the physical space is closed and locked, and it says there's a sign on the door that says "See Secretary for Key." During COVID, in those places, those schools that do not have school librarians, they didn't have that person there to help sift through. And that's part of, Chris mentioned every library, that's one of the roles that they've really taken on. It's to help publicize that need and start to advocate for communities that may not have realized that level of importance in the past.
Mm-hmm. It's so amazing. And, you know, when you say that, I always think back, and I might have even told you this. I'm old these days, and I went to elementary school in Philadelphia, brand new school in the early 1950s. Okay? It was a beautiful school called an elementary school. Amazingly, now it's a high school called Lamberton Elementary in West Philly. All right? And they had a huge school library. Right? They didn't have a librarian. Okay, the teachers would walk you in and you'd spend 15 minutes in there to pick out a book and they'd walk you out and bring you back 2 weeks later. Okay, we didn't have a librarian. And I honestly believe when we all got to junior high and high school, of course, there were librarians. All right, but I don't think me and my friends ever used the library like it should be. We missed out on the beginning, how important it is, okay, that with the work of the librarian and what they do and how they get you interested in education. It's just something that always pops into my mind that I could never understand way back when, and I still don't understand it to this day. I want to ask Chris, what is the role of your BOCES in dealing with the 22 libraries?
So we are really lucky here in New York State that we have these school library systems. And though there are educational service agencies around the country, there are no other states that have this type of school library system that specifically looks at supporting and advancing the role of school libraries. States have multi-type programs, but to have a dedicated school library is incredible. So our system provides professional development. We provide all of the, you know, technical support resources that they need. We provide collection development assistance. I'll be going out this afternoon to do some space planning with a librarian and look at how we can move things around and make it more of a learning commons in her library. We are able to do, as I mentioned earlier, those entrepreneurial types of things, like bring in computer programming, robotics, game-based learning, and board games. And so we're really able to provide an incredibly high level of services. Now, I have a big team here. Not all the school library systems across the state have as large of a team. I have four librarians that work with me here at the system.
Wow.
So that gives us an opportunity to really leverage a lot of time. It is.
We are,
outside of New York City, the second largest collection of sort of that administrative level school library staffing at a regional level in the country. And so it gives us, you know, I always say we can throw time at a problem or money at a problem. I threw money at staffing so that we could throw time at a lot of problems. And that's a strong solution for our rural schools.
What's the evolution of your school library work at the BOCES that it's so big, so strong, so powerful as what you just described? I mean, it's a rural 22,000 kids, let's just say 25,000 kids, okay, total, a group of 22 small districts. How'd you get so big and powerful and wonderful, and feel free to give yourself credit?
I guess I have to, you know. I don't know how to say it without that little bit of a humble brag.
Do it.
I said in the beginning, you know, I came up through urban education. I went to Milwaukee Public Schools through sixth grade, and then ended up in rural Pennsylvania, central Pennsylvania.
Which town? I'm from Pennsylvania.
And saw stark differences.
Which town?
Center County.
Oof.
It wasn't even a
state
town.
College? In State College?
Yeah, but the other side of the mountain from State College.
Oh, okay. All right.
The other side of the mountain. I mean, back in the sticks.
That sounds like a bad novel, the
rough.
Other side of the mountain. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I didn't have opportunities, and so when I got a chance to come in, but then I started my teaching career in North Carolina, which had county-based schools, like most of the country does.
Yeah,
and then
to
come back here to these little town-based schools, I really saw opportunities to leverage my background in instructional technology, and to start bringing staff in. And we just started, bringing more staff in, consolidating services, looking at the team as a whole, when possible, hiring certified school librarians to the team, and just growing a program. Now, I said, we're lucky because we have that level of state funding that underlies it and lets us really get new programs started.
But there's other BOCES that haven't
thing.
Done this. There's other BOCES that haven't done this to this extent, and I think it's really wonderful what you've done. Okay, and that they've let you that your BOCES has let you grow like this. Okay, and put so much emphasis on library services. It's just amazing. It's just absolutely amazing. Yes.
It's a different perspective, I think. And so right now I've actually had to turn the school library system over in a large part to my team, because I got tapped to be the director of our new online learning program that's serving students across New York State. And so we had that chance because we had staffing that I could give that extra time and attention to these really big picture ideas. So we were prepared with an online learning program and able to get it off the ground quickly.
And that's for the whole state or just for your BOCES area?
We're mainly serving our BOCES area, but we do have additional district customers across the state.
Good for you. Wow. Where'd you get this guy? Rick, does he wear a cape? Does he not? He flies into work every day? Or the big BOCES on it? Right? No parking space needed. Just fly in through the window. That's why the window's always open over there. Unbelievable. Chris, you're amazing. I got to tell you. Right? It's just great. Hey, Rick, you guys are in the publishing business over at Rose, and I love the work you guys do. How is COVID? You got to work with all these people. They all have to work through COVID. They're still working through it. How has it impacted the way you folks respond to all this?
You know, we had to make some very, very quick changes early. The traditional ways in which we interacted with our customers and librarians and teachers and others really changed. So, one of the first things that we had to move to were virtual meetings. And if we were supporting our users in providing professional development, we had to revamp the way that we were presenting our professional development to our educator users. And so we had to create new ways in order to do that. We had to rewrite our, quote, curriculums that we used in order to do that, because the way in which we anticipated people to interact in between each other and everyone being remote really changed the way in which we would provide those. And educators were very, novice in doing it in that way as well.
So
we had to come to them and really try and make them feel comfortable, let them know that this is, you know, delivering PD all online when they were used to, you know, coming together as a group, problem solving, doing group work, that it looks different now. And that, you know, we would, you know, whether we use breakout rooms within our web service, or whether we use a series of polls or questions through QR codes, some of those things we were already doing, but to put it all in a digital format made things very difficult, different. But we also responded in providing avenues for new content. So, for instance, early on in the COVID era, we released a new book called Virus Warriors, which provides COVID-related information for our younger readers in a way that was supportive but not scary. And it provided them the facts because there was a lot of information out there. We were providing, as Chris mentioned earlier, we had curated collections of ebooks that we were providing free subscriptions to during the, you know, for the first year of COVID, in order to make sure that at least content needs were starting to be met in different ways. We then, through our various programs, whether it was our Rosen Level Up for our pre-K to 3 students, or through our spotlight on social and emotional learning for our intermediate students, or our teen health and wellness database for our secondary students to access, we provided a way that students could share their writing, their illustrations, or other work, and have them submitted. And then we would take those pieces, we would have editors review them, we would publish them and put them out in various ways. So in our teen health and wellness database, that becomes new content within the database based on how students were responding. So we were not only providing content, but we were providing a platform for students to have voice. And during those early times of COVID, that was extremely important. There was a lot of anxiety. There was a lot of need for students to express what they were thinking. They were able to do that and share it with others. And then also I would say that we really tried to meet our educational partners where they needed it. Sometimes they would call and say, Rick, I just need, or they would call customer service or anyone in our organization, and we would do somersaults just getting them what they needed at that time. So now that things have, I would say, started to calm down a little bit, and
we hope,
saying that apprehensively a little.
we all are.
Our new normal. Now in our new normal, and it seems to be a little more stable these days, there may be that, you know, the time here and there that it isn't. We're really focusing on what do you think your needs are going to be going forward?
Yeah.
We know that the education that was here 2 years ago isn't going to be the same going forward.
That is correct.
And we're trying to respond to those needs in a very thoughtful way. And that may be through our advisory boards that we have for our various content pieces that we publish. For instance, like Teen Health and Wellness and Level Up, we have advisory boards that serve and help give us information about what is it that you really need. So we're really partners in that part of it.
Good, excellent explanation. Thank you on all that. And so, Chris, does that? I know you guys have talked, you chat all the time. Does that pretty much cover, like, where are we now? And it's interesting you mentioned about the online learning. You're going to be in charge of an online learning program, okay? And like Rick said, everything's changed. There's a new normal, all right? And how does the new normal affect libraries. And, you know, Rick also mentioned social-emotional learning. We have our new SEL today, .org website. That's a big deal, and it has to do, you know, online, in-person, libraries, that beloved librarian helping you, looking you in the face, you know, put that all together. And by the way, put that all together, Chris, I notice you have a doctor, you're Dr. Harris. I will give you a second doctor, a doctorate from the University of Larry, if you can actually answer that entire question, which solves all the problems of the Western world. Thank you.
It's a big question. You know, we really looked at the online learning program that I developed, which is called NY Virtual. And, there's more information on it online at nyvirtual.org. What we did is, as you said, you know, there needs to be that high level of support. And I think a lot of, you know, the success that we've seen so far comes from that library understanding. We know the library is the place in the school that sometimes kids that don't have another home in the school, they congregate there. And we know the school librarian, you know, we certainly hope it is always welcoming and provides that safe place and that safe harbor where students can find something that interests them in books that represent them. They can see themselves there. And so we wanted to make sure built an online program that represented that. And so the students have an advisory teacher that they meet with every day. In a group of about 15 to 20 students that they're together with so that they can have that community, so that they still have that sense of looking each other in the face and having those connections, even if they're, you know, even though they're fully online. What we've tried to do to help librarians move there is to really encourage them to build things that are digital first. And so, you know, if you've got a program going on in your school library like a book club, build a digital first, and, you know, if you have those asynchronous elements, then when you are able to meet in person, wonderful. But you still have the questions that students can reflect upon ahead of time, maybe make some notes for themselves. But if you do have to go hybrid or remote or something, you've got that solution already in place because you built it digital first. And so we're really trying to encourage that. You know,
is it up and running? Is NY Virtual up and running?
Oh, yeah. We have about... right now, I think today, 120 students that are enrolled, most of them being very successful. You know, we had this incredible opportunity to, you know, normally we try things in education. We have to test on a couple of students and see. But, you know, we had an opportunity to test every single student for their capacity to thrive in online learning. And so we've really told districts, this is not a COVID solution. This is a let's move forward solution. A lot of states have these virtual schools. New York hasn't in the past, really.
Yeah, we suddenly learned that some kids learned better virtually. Why not give them that opportunity? That simple.
And not everybody.
Not everybody. I agree. Some kids learn better.
Yep.
Okay, and we it's one of the good things that came out of the stinking pandemic, I got to tell you. And your point, and I loved your point a minute ago about the library in terms of a welcoming place. All right, and the librarian themselves, 99.9% of them are welcoming people. And that has so much to do with the kids' social, emotional welfare. And that seems to be one of the key things in every school district this year, and I hope for a long time to come. All right, and again, it brings up the importance of the school library and the school library system, that this is something we don't just throw away in the budget because it costs a little too much money this year. Okay, the library matters. It really does, as you guys both know. Okay, it's unbelievable. So it's going to be. And just as a curiosity, Chris, how's this year going? Is everything going good this year?
It's going great for most of the students.
There you go.
Yeah, it really is. We've got resources in place. We've got, you know, talk about, you know, really,
yeah,
you know, pushing that dollar further. You know, by purchasing regionally, we're able to leverage the. So we provide Rosen's Teen Health and Wellness for all of our districts through a group purchase. We have the spotlight on social-emotional learning resources for our elementary students. Districts came to me over the summer and said, gosh, we really need to focus on SEL. I said, well, you know, you don't have to go out and buy anything. We already have, you know, these incredible programs in place
there you
ready
go.
For you to leverage.
There you go. There you go. And I know that you guys are also leveraging there. You'll like this, Rick, out in Western New York, because the only school lunch you're offering are White Hots. I just learned about them. White Hot Hot Dogs. Is this correct? Is that the only thing you're offering?
That's in Western New York, White Hots. Yeah.
White Hot Chunks in Jell-O. I think that's the essence, okay, of what
we're
talking about.
We're
going
to take you to the next level of garbage plates in Rochester.
There you go. Okay. And White Hots, by the way, I just learned about these. I haven't had one yet. Friends were in from Rochester, okay, this weekend. And literally, I'm not making this up, and they told me these are these white hot dogs, okay, that people eat. And here in Maine, we have red hot dogs, okay? So what can I tell you? They're not brown. They're red. But Rochester, good old Genesee Valley, White Hots. Am I right, Chris? We're good? Suspended in Jell-O.
You are correct. Yep.
Right. Just think about it. Okay? This is great. You guys are terrific. Really, I just love, Rick, I love doing shows with you and the rest of the gang at Rosen. And Chris, you're just a wonderful guest. You really got, you're really something. I thank you. Thank you,
thank
guys.
You.
Okay?
Thank you.
Rick, it was great. Enjoy those White Hots and Buffalo Wings, whatever you do out in Western. And the Bills. Enjoy the Bills.
Bills are doing great this year.
Yeah, they are. They are. Okay. It's going to be
Thank
a good year.
Thank you for
year.
The opportunity, though. Really
my pleasure, guys. I'll be in touch. You take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yes, you're welcome. Bye-bye. White Hot suspended in lime Jell-O or lemon. I can see it now. White hot dogs, everybody. I just learned about this. All right. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, and I'll also archive this one over at seltoday.org as well. Those are our two websites. All right. Please check them out in our magazine over at ace-ed.org. And glad you enjoyed this show. I certainly did. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.